It'll be here, brother was down with attic fever. Yeah, that was a month prior to me, for about 3 months till he got blood. He came back and I stopped him.
Did that see him?
Don't smoke.
And then you came here in 1914, and that would have been in Colbatch's day.
Perkins.
Perkins' day, yeah. And what did you come here as? What was the nature of your work?
Anything and everything.
So you were a general handyman?
Yeah.
And you you worked in the garden, in the paddocks?
No, I never was on the garden, in the paddocks, milking cows and anything that came out.
And what was your title? Did you have a position where you were just a...
just a farmhand.
Farmhand. And you stayed at that job for all the time
years.
You were here?
Mm. Mm.
Do you remember any remarkable changes or funny events or amusing people or difficult people or anything that springs to mind as an outstanding piece of your life here? Or do you remember any particularly difficult times? For example, what about the, did the work, the First War have much of an effect on the place? Well, what do you remember of the, how hard life was?
Well, you started at 5:30 in the morning, feeding horses, and you went back at 8:30 at night to turn them out, and you had it knocked off at 7:30 and went back again at 2:00, that was midday. That was all you got off, and you did that 7 days a week.
See.
Then it was rain on Christmas Day, when you brought all your horses in bed and beer.
It's fairly rough, isn't it? And so your day was 5:30 until 8:30 at night?
Mm-hmm.
With a bit of time off for lunch, and that was about
all?
And no morning tea or afternoon tea?
No,
or
no smokers. Wasn't allowed to smoke on the farm. The only place you was allowed to smoke was down at the gate by the old oval. And then they took it up to the big main gate at the farm. And nobody else was... You wasn't allowed to smoke that way. Not even out in the paddocks.
And you lived on a house in a house on the college?
Yeah.
You had to come in from where?
Hmm?
Where did you come from then? Where did you live?
I was born and reared here.
So you lived off the college?
Yeah.
And came on. How long would it take you to get to work in the morning? An hour or?
I rebuilt the wine cellars.
Oh, a few minutes. I'd say you were very close to it. Yes.
Of course you had your... Yeah, come here and have your breakfast. They used to allow you, I mean, it was £1 a week they gave me, and they keep. You had breakfast at 6:30, dinner at midnight, at midday, and lunch, whatever you like, tea at 6:30 noon.
And you came across to the dining room here to have it, did you?
Hmm?
You had it in the dining room. You used
in
to eat
the workmen there.
Oh, the workman's dining room, yeah. And this was 7 days a week you kept that at?
7 days a week if you were on stables, early morning.
But you weren't always on stables, were you?
No.
There must have been a roster system, wasn't
there? Well, yeah. This week you might be on stables, you might have used stables then for another week or so. But even if you was on stables early morning, you never got no extra. No such thing as overtime.
How many men were there like yourself around?
About 8 or 9.
8 or 9, so it was a... And you'd often have several men on the same section.
You'd have a pregnant stable man, but you had to come and help you.
Mm-hmm.
You'd only get one student.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And you were married, Mr. Daly?
Married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how did your wife put up with this business of those long hours? And I guess she had to grin and bear it, did she?
Well, she had to grin and bear it.
Yeah.
Grin and bear it was right. The students had no other way to get around, only a drag. And if I never took that drag, and the five horses, they stopped out. But if I went home, we'd get, say, 6:30 of the evening, go down at midnight.
Sorry, this is the thing that we're trying to do.
We got home at midnight, when you've got nothing to do, if you're on 5:30 in the morning, you still have to get up and do better work. You just don't tell you if you ask for anything over. I tell you, you've done that for the love of the Christ or the love of the students.
I see, yeah, that's a good way to get out of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And were you happy in the work generally? Did you like it?
Happy, yes. Happier than what I am now.
And even with these very long hours, you didn't mind them as long as you got a bit of time off somewhere else?
You never got much time off, you got...
a break from it, as long as you got rostered on and rostered out.
Yeah.
Here and there, it wasn't so bad.
The first 12 months you got 2 days off of it.
Did you get any annual leave at all? What, a week or 2 weeks?
You got the first 12 months you got 2 days, the next 12 months you got 4 days, I think, the next lot you got... I don't know where it was 8 days, I think, and that's as far as you could go. You couldn't go any further.
You could hardly say it was generous conditions, then, could you?
Hmm?
You could hardly say the conditions were generous, because they weren't.
Oh, no.
And it was £1 a week when you began, and you keep.
And you wasn't able to say a word.
No.
Because there'd be plenty more blokes waiting, carrying their swag, looking for a job.
Mm. This must have been the days when any person that, say, was a member of a union and made a difficulty, would simply be asked to leave,
well,
and plenty of blokes and come and replace him.
Talking about the union, we weren't in the union not till, well, I'll say 15 or 16. My brother-in-law come here, he was rejected in the army, they chucked him out of the army, and he came here as a worked in the factory, he was the one that formed the union. So one day he walked into the, knocked on the principal's door and walked in, the principal said, come in. And he started talking about the union, he put on the light and said, well, that's you, Billy Osborne, is it? He said, get out. Well, that was the start of the union.
Mm. And everybody joined it, do you think?
Yeah.
And did that make much of a difference to your conditions and wages?
Oh, yeah.
How did they change? What was the improvement?
Well, you see, they turned around then, you've got so much, few days a year sick leave, and then your public holiday, you work the public holiday, which was double time. And
this was about 1916? This was roughly 1916?
Yeah, and then on.
How did the... how did the First World War affect the place? Do you have any memories of that?
Well, it affected.
Mm.
It affected it pretty hard. I think there was about 10 or 30 years, and about, or nearly about the same, I suppose, 2 years, and about the same 3 years.
So the numbers went down a great deal.
No, I'm not telling me.
Did those boys that stayed here feel particularly bad about staying and not going off to the war, or? Is there a feeling that they
were
doing the wrong
thing? When they came of age and got their people's consent,
they
went.
But those that stayed through,
hmm?
Those students that were old enough to go to war, that stayed behind, was there any feeling that they weren't doing the right thing, that they should have been off?
No. They were, as I said, when they came of age, they backed up and
went.
Of course, that's talking about the war. He took a lot of coaxing from my people to sign it. For me to go away. One of us might be the same as students.
Are there any particular things that you did while you were here that gave you great satisfaction? Any particular Did you prepare a...
Well, it didn't matter what it was. If you had a team of horses out for a paddock, when you took an interest in it, and I'll tell you straight, your lines is as good then with a team of horses as what they are now with a tractor. A bit like that down.
So the pride in the everyday.
You took
things.
A pride in whatever you was doing.
But are there any special things that stand out in your memory as things that you thought you did especially well?
Well, I think the hardest job I pulled on was those two big old silos up at the barn.
You built those, did you?
I helped.
Can you tell me how they were built? Can you tell me how they were built?
They're 18-foot in diameter, 6-inch wall, 3-foot high mould, and every all those, that lot of cement, gravel was all mixed by hand, and then pushed to the top by wheelbarrows.
So that up on planks?
Up on one big long plank. Just to run up and push up, and I was one of the ones that pushed the barrel.
And then poured it down?
There was a bloke on the top, he used to, you'd dip it out and he'd fill it in the while the other bloke rammed around it. And ran on top.
Pouring it down. And what, the moulds were galvanised iron moulds, 6 inches apart of curved galvanised iron. One chap was telling me an old student, I think it was, a favourite game used to be to get up the top of those when they were full and jump in. An old student was telling me that one of the favourite games they used to play was to climb up those silos when they were full of wheat and jump inside and play about there. And he said that there was a time when he was never going to jump, and he luckily shone his torch down because it was dark and he couldn't see, and he said, good thing he didn't jump because there was nothing in there. He'd have gone right to the bottom and killed himself if he'd jumped.
Oh, I used to come at anything. Up there at the stables, the big thing up there, I think used to hold about 70 or 80 ton of char. We just have a big hole in it where the char hits the ground. Bellaby was astute, he could look behind me with the poultry of the garden or something. He gets up on the top and he says, this is the way to do it, and then he jumped. And all this chap come down on top of him. He's only in a little hole like that. Jimmy Wallaby, he was on the stables with me, and I don't know how we got down, whether we jumped off the top of the shed, down onto the ground, onto the haystack or what, but we went in, we opened the wrong doors. Poor Bellaby was in the centre once.
And all the chaff came out, I suppose.
All the chaff around Bellaby came out.
He was very lucky he didn't suffocate, of course. He could have easily suffocated there.
If Jimmy Wall walked along there, he'd say yes, and he stuck a head of forehand at his mouth. He said, I'll make so and so sick.
Are there any other little interesting or funny incidents like that that you can remember? People doing funny things or playing a prank or two or... pranks or tricks on people.
Well, there was a lot of funny things. The whole trouble was there were a lot of dirty things.
Oh, that doesn't matter. I mean, Lee Philp was telling me about the...
You can't say nothing much because... I wouldn't like to say anything to hurt the family's feelings or any of those.
No, I appreciate that. No, fair enough. But there were some funny things and some were a bit rough, were they? Can we put it that way?
There was funny things and rough things. The funniest thing ever I've seen was when they had a procession in the border. And I don't know how they done it, but they did it all right. They got a cow skin and all. And they had an old cow. Went into a skeleton of a cow in this position. He was a bloke going along every now and again, and I'm knocking the cow going up Harvey Street.
Yeah.
That was the talk of Bulla for years and years and years. But as you say, funny things, well, it's hard when you take a principal, you don't like saying anything that happened.
No.
While he was a principal, I wouldn't myself.
No, that's fair too. You and your wife and family lived over near the winery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you yourself got fed here. at the dining room, breakfast, dinner, and tea.
Until I got married. When I got married, I went home.
I see. So, and you got married, went to live in that house near the winery, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now then, that meant that you obviously ate your meals with your wife.
Mm.
Did you get your stuff from the college, or the, you couldn't buy it from the college, you had to get it into Gawler? And that would have been what, because this would be before refrigeration, this was what, how often a week would you go to Gawler to get your meat? Once a week or twice a week?
Twice a week.
To get your meat and your vegetables and so on?
Yeah.
Once a week or something like that. And how long would it have taken you with a, like, to get from Gawler to your house?
Well, it depends on what sort of a wind you had.
Mm.
And only had a two-stroke push bike.
Mm. But it would have been something like an hour if you were going well, would you?
Oh, yeah.
An hour one way, I mean. Well, did you actually choose of your own free will to come out and be a farmhand? Were you always interested in the land, or did you sort of... I know you said you almost fell into the job and you stay here,
yeah.
Stayed here, but would that have been your first choice? And
well, it was. I was just in my old dad went down for a while and had a stroke. I think he had nearly 2 years of that. Well, whatever will come, you see that. I'm asked it on the brother of me.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get out and go to work.
They were fairly difficult times, I suppose.
It didn't matter what we did, as long as it got a few bob.
Mm-hmm. What if you had to go through it again? Would you have put up with the same things that you put up with?
Yes.
You didn't mind too much.
No.
Would there be any real criticism you'd have of the sort of work you had to do, or the not so much the names of people, but were there, say, people about that were above you, or below you, or equal to you, that made life particularly difficult at any stage? Were there any, you know...
It all depended. You might have one or two enemies wherever you went. You'd always have somebody up against you, but 90% of the people you worked with were
all right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that you got reasonable assistance from the authorities at the college to provide the various tools and machinery and carts and so on that you needed for your work, or was it difficult to get things?
Yeah,
I mean, if you broke an axe, for example, or broke an axe handle...
Oh, no, you could walk in and say, I broke the axe handle, you get another. But if you wanted a set of plough shears and break up and put on the plough, you come down and ask Mr. Pilker, want some new shears, you say, I haven't got the money. Put up with what you got.
Mm-hmm. So that was difficult to get certain things.
He was a hard man to get anything out of.
Do you remember his famous pen that he used to have?
Hmm?
Do you remember his pen? He had the same pen for years and years that eventually Sid Wicker and somebody else pinched it from him and wouldn't give it back.
Too, those sort of things never stopped in your mind.
But what do you remember about some of the principles, just in general things? What you hear from Perkins and then through Colbatch?
Professor Perkins just had a great big high push bike. And wherever he went, he rode that bike. And you could be up in the paddock. An old road come along, you'd get off the bike, you'd lie stand by a bush, and you wouldn't know he was there until he got on the, hopped up on the back of the engine, and he said, how's things going? Then you could stop that team and look around, and once the old road got on that bike, you'd never look back.
Mm-hmm.
And keep going. But Carl Batchy was a hard man. He was very hard. Every horse had to be fed with a kerosene bucket. You weren't allowed to smoke up there. Listen up, the coming down. One of the students said, oh, we'll have a smoke, so I said, all right. Who should walk out of the pine, behind the pine tree was Colbatch. We didn't blow the tripe out of us.
Mm. And then you had, who was after Colbatch? Burks, was he?
Yeah. Burke's with him, but the only thing wrong with him, he was all military.
He had been an army man, hadn't he? He had been in the army, hadn't he?
Yeah, he was a captain in the army.
Well, how did things change when Callaghan got here? Did the place really sort of wake up to itself then?
They didn't change that much. Everybody seemed to have gone the same way. But he had a way with him that he wanted done this way or done that way, and that was the end. But he wasn't a bad man to work under. He's like all the rest of us, he all had his flaws.
Mm. And then there was McCulloch was after him, wasn't he? Dr. McCulloch came after Callaghan.
The students were getting knocked out. I don't know what those for. You see, in the dining room. And the eldest girl, she was going to get inoculated too for something, whatever it was. But anyway, Jack Hill said to the student, he said, mind you, it'll hurt when you get it. And she turned around and said, you mind your own big business in front of everybody.
Yes. Of course, one of his daughters is now the advisor to the state government on women's affairs.
That's what I'm talking about.
Debbie.
Yeah.
So I haven't met her. But
I don't know what become the other girl. She went overseas.
The other one's married. They're both in Adelaide. The other one is married and lives at Blackwood or Blair or somewhere, I believe. But, what was I going to say? Going back to Perkins, it might have been before, I think. There was a chap called Angus, Professor Angus, was getting around the countryside. He was never here very much, and he was the Director of Agriculture until 1910. And then he left and went up the river and became the Member of Parliament for Victoria and Light for the next time. You don't know anything about him at all. Just trying to think. When you came to get your job here, did you have any special training or background for it?
No.
You simply wandered along and what, saw the principal, or who did you see?
They told my old dad to tell me to come and start work, and that was all about
it. So your dad more or less arranged it, or your dad more or less arranged it, did he?
They just asked me, he said he'd see what I'd do.
How old were you then, when you started here?
Well, I was about 16.
16. So you're just not too long out of school, really, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You weren't too long out of school.
Well, I worked for a couple of cockies a couple of years before I came in.
Mm-hmm. So you went to primary school and then left
there? I went to the middle school down here at Kangaroo Park. Mm-hmm. Public school.
And then from there, well, you were working virtually since you were a boy, really. Yes. You were working since you were a boy,
yes.
Really, and have not stopped since.
Well, still going.
You left in, what, 64, wasn't it?
Hmm?
What, you left in 1964, 62?
Well, I couldn't just say how that was, but anyhow, we're still
it's
on there.
It's over there in the other room, the piece of paper. Yes.
Yeah, something like that. That's 14 years ago.
Can you account for the fact that everybody that comes to Roseworthy in any capacity at all seems to live forever? I mean, Callaghan's still alive, McCulloch's still alive, Philpy's still alive, Sid Wicker died at 70-something not long ago. There's a bloke called Richardson, a student. There's a chap called Richardson who was a student here in 19... He started in 1899 as a student here. He's still alive, living down at Warradale at 93 or something. But what is it about this place that makes people go live forever just about? Everyone seems to live forever. It comes up here.
Well, I don't know where it was, the cook's food or what.
But there's certainly a lot of people that have been around for a long, long time that are still alive.
Yeah. Yes. The food was rough and ready. We used to have a cook, Ms. Mott, and the Chief Steward. You have one record in the gravel pit.
Oh, sorry.
Have this record. What's the matter with Kelly? They'll be found out he drunk all day, all night. More you'd get the record. Going, they'd be playing. What's the matter with Kelly? He's all right. And the chief, the housemaster, mate with name Rob Adams, he couldn't do nothing with him.
Adams.
He walked in, he sacked one. He was sacking the door, the other town. Get some old bloke out of the pub and patch him on and start. He'll come up next day and sack another one so they get his bottles and go off again the next day.
That must have been a fairly difficult time when the students weren't allowed to drink on the place and knowing that the cooks and so on were
They weren't allowed to have a drink, they weren't allowed to have a push box, they weren't allowed to have anything. Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
It would have been a fairly tough life for young fellas to come and lock them up here for 3 years, wouldn't it?
Nothing here at all. And then if he wanted, he got his weekend off to go home. The mail wasn't going, well, he could pick up his bag and he could walk to Rosewood and catch the train. They wouldn't give you a bus or anything to take you away. You'd have to walk.
That'd be a fair walk from here to Rosewood, too.
Or somewhat more.
It's a fair walk. Well, is there anything else you can think of, Mr. Day, that is worth passing on? You see, you've filled in a few details for me that, you know, just give an idea of the colour of the times, not so much. You've filled in a few details which have given me an idea of the, what can I call it, the colour of life, you know, the way it was. Is there anything else you can think of that is worth passing on? Any recollections, say, of what the Depression did to the place, or whether at any stage the place was felt to be in danger of collapsing and closing down?
Well, we didn't want a strike once.
I realised there was a strike, weren't I? Do you remember anything about that? Is there anything you can tell me about the strike, just in general terms?
Oh, yes,
please. I know Burks was unpopular, and he was probably the cause of it, but is there any... any other details? Like, I mean, where did they meet? Where did the students hold their meeting? And
I think they held it downtown. Held their meeting down there. Got the rep of the Government Workers Association to secretary to work their case. Mm-hmm. Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, I think Captain Blackburn, the VC fellow, took it up for him. That's a good few years ago.
It's 1932, I think it was.
And then there was 40 odd cows. And two of us had to milk them and do all the work. We used to get up about 2:30 in the morning. Get the cows in, get to work.
This was during the strike.
Yeah.
How long did it last?
6 or 7 weeks.
6 or 7 weeks? Mm-hmm. So you were busy for 6 or 7 weeks. What do you remember when you first were told that it was on? What was your first reaction to it? You know, when the news first got to you that...
When I got it, I was home on my holidays. And my noise was the brother of the dad come home and said, you've got to go back to work. The dad's around on the strike. So, that's one against old Burks.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't popular with the staff either, was he?
He wasn't popular with anybody.
And the strike went for 7 weeks. You gave up some of your holidays to help run the place while the boys were on strike.
Right.
Did you get any time in lieu of that later on? Did they make it up to you? It just never seemed to occur to people then that you did it for the love of it or something.
Yeah, you got nothing out of that. If you got kicked with a horse and leg all bruised up and busted up, that was just your bad luck.
And you paid the hospital bill and you paid the doctor.
You paid the lot.
Mm. And this was even after the union was... This was even after the union was around.
Oh, yeah. Then the union took up a lot of...
When would you say about you got something like decent conditions, like say accident compensation and a decent annual leave?
Well, I suppose they'd come in about
1922, 1923. You got 4 days sick leave?
4 days.
Mm. And if you didn't take that 4 days out, you lost that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to... And you could stop by 1 day, second day, you had to get a doctor's certificate.
Mm. Why is it that people seem to have put up with a lot of these things that people wouldn't put up with anymore?
Well, a job was hard to get. You had to put up with it. If you were a married man, you was only getting, say, 5 or 6 shillings a day, and we had a family on, it was hard, you had to put up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd hobble to work with them. And you're the best you could, and you say nothing about it.
Mm, it's a pretty fair stick to whatever somebody said, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, it's really blackmail of some sort.
Well, it was one way or another. It was like when young Bernard Lynch got killed. They used to get their meat from abattoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And this night, young Bernard Lynch, he had to go to Rotary to pick up the meat.
Was he a student or...?
Yeah. He was a student. And he undone the old horse and gets up in the cart with a sandwich in his hand, and away went the old horse. Bang, hit a place or something, took him out and killed him. Hit him to... Don't know why they get him caught. Was put 2 horses in the drag, and bed on top of that and take him to Gawler. I don't know what hour of the night the brother got him in there. Couldn't drop the horse at all, just walk along. And walk out. Over the week or so after, and I was called an office. Now I know about it. Old Carly said to me, "Why didn't you go and get the meat last night? Or the other night?" He said, "Mr. Orchard said for you." I said, "Mr. Orchard never said it to me." I said, "Mr. Pritchard said I had to go. He was the housemaster." I said, "I don't take orders from everybody." He said, "That's just where you're wrong." He said, "You take orders from all staff."
Mm. Well, this boy was killed in... Well, what year was that? Do you remember?
No. It's a long time ago. Mm. Good many years ago. I don't know whether it was a couple of years before old Coley finished, or it could have been 3 years before he finished.
It was under Colbatch, wasn't it?
Mm.
Were there any other major accidents or things you remember like that? Someone being killed or anybody badly hurt doing anything?
Oh yeah, people. I had 2 knees smashed up, 2 collarbones broke at the same time, no skin on my back.
This
and
was
horse, 16 horses. We had 2, 3, 4. It was 3 8 horse teams. Student had a team, 2 students had a team each, and I had the other one. And they bolted. Went straight over the top of a lot of us. I was still here, peddler saying his prayers with the horse sitting up on the top. And on the, he's on the seat, and the horse is over the top of the collar with
him. Mm. And of course, it wasn't an easy matter to find medical attention either. It wasn't an easy matter to find medical attention either. You had to go into Gawler or get someone out or something.
No, it was hard. It was like when the oval was put down. That oval was all graded by hand. Well, Colbatch, the principal, he used to write on the stick that was put. Two blows just to have to pull him around the oval. He had the one way, he reckoned that was the only way to keep it level. It was all graded by hand.
What, with buck scrapers and so on?
Hmm?
With buck scrapers or horses?
A lump of timber. Well, a piece of timber, I suppose, be as long as this room. Say 6x6. He stood on it. And you and I pulled it.
literally by hand. Two men put it, and Colbeck stood on, like a long sleeper, I suppose.
Yeah. The plough that was, I think it was 10 horses and a big disc plough, just to be a vineyard, grapevines was all under that.
And where was the oval before that? Well, didn't they have an oval? Yeah. Out behind the new library there?
Yeah.
Behind the fire station, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a fire station, it's on the part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And tennis courts was there too.
How long would it have taken to grade the oval by hand like that? Weeks, I suppose.
Oh. Well, I suddenly was on there. Been there for at least a couple of months or more.
And he was out there every day standing on this stick?
Mm-hmm.
Every day. And how many hours a day would you be at it?
8 hours
a day. And he stood on the stick?
Yeah. He'd stand on that stick, shoveling through those animals. And that oval was his pastime.
Mm-hmm.
You'd never really want to tell him. He wasn't in his office, he'd be down on that oval with a stick.
But did he?
No, I was cutting all the weeds out.
Was he responsible for the grandstand out there too?
Yeah.
I believe he used to do a lot of this stuff himself, or get out there and get into it a bit himself.
The grandstand was built by my brother. He never had no trade. And the last nail had to go into it. Old Coley said to Billy, he said, "Give me the hammer and nail, Bill." He said, "I'll drive the last one in." Coley missed the nail and hit him on my thumb. I would have seen the mess.
Yeah, but hit the wrong nail.
Hmm?
He hit the wrong nail.
Mm-hmm. But he could take a joke and give a joke. Yeah, everything that was carted, you had no, everything was carted by horses and carts and no metal up at the farm.
Do you remember the various experiments that Perkins carried out? He had little experimental plots, didn't he, here and there, growing various things and manure tests and so on?
Those experimental plots was carried on practically right up the line there.
And do you remember Perkins being out there himself, digging around and looking at them and so on?
Oh yeah, so he used to come back, so he used to. Mm. He used to go out on a Sunday, pulling out foreign grain out of the heads out of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
The principal would be out there with the mob with us all, pulling out the grain, the heads.
Well, who would have been the last principals to get out and do that sort of thing? Perkins would have done it, I suppose, and you said Colbatch did it.
Yeah, well, I think they were about the last two.
And Callahan wouldn't have been out there, I don't think, would he?
I don't think so. He was more interested in horses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he kept them on, didn't he, fairly late when many people had changed over to tractors. He insisted on keeping the horses.
Well, he was horse mad. He was horse mad.
What can you tell me about the, what they used to call the harem down there? The old stallion box and the harem and the timber store. What
the harem?
Can you tell me, look, just how that used to work and what happened there?
Well, where the old barn is, well, I don't know about the barn, but where they got a lot of timber and stuff stacked in it, that used to be the old stable. There were 16 horses in that. What they call the harem now, there was 10 horses in that.
That's around the back with sort of circular walls, isn't it? That one with the...
And right around the back, yeah. And the last one, the open one at the back, I think there's a lot of our implements in there now. That was horses there. And then over in the old blacksmith shop that they knocked down, that was horses there. So the, and then when they shipped over to the other stables that they knocked down, they used to use the harem, put cows in there, show cows in there.
Mm-hmm. What about that stallion box there that's next to the barn that you call?
Yeah.
That's, well, they used to keep the stallion in there, didn't
they? Yes, it used to be in there. Horse by the name of Pascarell.
Mm-hmm. And that's just where he lived, that was his house?
That was his house, and the harem was his yard. He was shut up like a prisoner.
These, of course, Clydesdales, aren't they? These are Clydesdales we're talking about.
No, one knew was a blood horse.
Oh, I see. But they used to have a lot of these Clydesdales, didn't they? A lot of these big draft horses.
The first heavy horse in Chumley was a horse named Absolute or William. And he was half Shire and half Python. And then they got another one called Lord Hopetown, and he was a Clydesdale. And now talking about horses, Colbatch was the principal, and he was a vet. And he goes over here to George's, and he buys a mare. He brings it home, and he said to us fellows, the farmer, he said, I bought this horse. He says, the prize mare, he said, I want it looked after. It's a Clydesdale. A very free worker. And when you take it out, he said, take a tie back and tie it back. So Alf Benny was, I suppose, one of the best teamsters you'd ever wish to meet. Didn't matter what old Alf done, but right the edge of that table, straight. So on the orchard was the farm manager. He went out to see how old Alf was getting on with his horse. He said, what are you doing, Alf? He said, I thought you, I told you, he said, to tie the bear back. She's free. Tie her back, he said. He said, I'll put a rope around the neck and drag her. I paid 65 quid for that.
She wasn't much good.
Nothing at all. Georgia saw it was all right, they got rid of it.
But of course, it's a different thing being a vet to being a teamster, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And the horse might be a perfectly healthy horse, but it mightn't be any good in a team.
Well, Callahan was the same, he bought it, a lot of them, and a lot of them wasn't worth it.